And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming.
Hashtag give the kid a vote.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We got Jake King. We got Mo Dakhil. We got Jade Hoy producing. And we've got a hell of a show for you today. Coming up on the show, little intro right now. What's worse? Play a game of what's worse. We've got KD back in Brooklyn. We've got James Harden with a few games under his belt. His ever-shrinking belt, I should say, in Philadelphia, as he seems to get in better and better shape after being traded. And then we've got the two hottest teams in basketball, the Mavs and the Celtics, and we'll start off with the Celtics. Jay, you were there on Sunday for a hell of a game between the Celtics and the Nets. Jason Tatum went off 50-plus. This is the exact type of game that you want the Celtics to play. Like crunch time, they moved the ball, they played smart basketball, the defense was good enough. Obviously against Brooklyn, it's going to be tough to completely lock them down. But I think you have to look at, 14 of the last 16, they've obviously been a different team since the calendar turn. Ime Udoka is getting praise everywhere for the job he's done. The players look happy. Everyone's in a good mood. And so I got to ask, if this Celtics team, do they finally have it to push through to a deep playoff run after, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, just looking like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, I've never covered a team that has changed as drastically as they have in the middle of a season. This team was unwatchable 2 months ago. Just played disgusting basketball, collapsed down the fourth quarter regularly. And ever since then, their defense has been by far the best in the league. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have really taken it upon themselves to get other guys involved. the ball movement has picked up crazy. And for a while, you know, they weren't playing anybody. It was against just subpar competition, teams missing a lot of guys. But the last three games, Atlanta, they hold the Hawks to 33 points in the second half. Memphis, they, you know, Memphis comes in as one of the hottest teams in the league. Celtics beat them by 13. And then today, KD had it going. The Nets were in a shootout. Celtics defense didn't get as many stops as usual. But Tatum was ridiculous. He rose to every challenge. And you know, if he's playing that well, and it's not just about the points for him. He's always been able to score points. It's more about the patience to get the types of looks that he wants. And that means getting to the bucket. That means getting to good three-point shots. That means, you know, once he had it going, he made some tough threes. But the free throw attempts, all of it, it's when he gets easy points and gets himself going, then he's extremely difficult to stop. And he's been much more patient, much more unwilling to settle for bad shots lately. And it changes everything for the Celtics when he's like that.
Yeah, Mo, I think you know, we've talked about this a bunch across a bunch of podcasts, but with Tatum and the Celtics into the game, like I've stated, hey, I love the way they're going to be able to close these games defensively. It's just offensively, will they make the right decisions? At least on Sunday, don't want to overreact too much to that game, but at least on Sunday I was watching, and as they're executing down the stretch of the game, I was just like, yes, this, like, make it this basketball, make it this guy. And it's, and again, it's not like, oh, Jason Tatum, just go get 50 plus every time. Like, it's not about that. It was about the decision making. Like, I had very few notes on just things that I didn't like in that game with the way that they handled themselves and the way that even defensively, like, look, you're gonna give up points to the Nets, but I just thought they competed in a smart way on both ends of the floor.
I mean, I kept tweeting out videos going like, this is it. This is it. This is what we want. And the biggest example of it was with like 40 seconds left, Tatum has Curry on him. They send the double team with Irving. He kicks it out immediately to Smart, and Smart swings it to Jaylen Brown in the corner for a three. Like, that was, and that kind of seals the game right there. But it was the, I'm going to get off the ball quickly because the double's coming. It's Marcus Smart not holding it in an immediate swing. And it's, that's the kind of stuff right there. But it's, you know, to go just kind of sort of zoom out and look at all this, this is like a freaking Disney movie, right? Like, when you watch this, this team was struggling. Everything Jay was saying, unwatchable 2 months ago. Everything that you felt like there was issues, there were questions of like, oh, are they really happy playing together and things like that? And then it slowly turned. I have a question. Is this like an Angels in the Outfield type thing?
You think that there's an angel?
Angels in the Outfield.
You think there's an angel there? Guiding Jason Tatum into better decisions.
I think so. I think there's somebody on his shoulder. Or maybe it's like the movie The Sixth Man.
Are you just watching these Celtics games and you're just waiting to see Tony Danza? Like, is that how that's going?
Don't trash Tony Danza. He's great. Well, man, come on.
Yeah, no, he's so good. He's so good he hasn't worked in 30 years. But yeah, no, he's great.
He hasn't wanted to. He hasn't wanted to, Zach. Yeah. He's been turning down roles. Let me live my fantasy.
Your fantasy, I just want to clarify for the people at home, your fantasy is for Tony Danza to be involved in the Boston Celtics turnaround.
Yeah, I just, you know, I want to see him doing the angel signal like in that movie.
Jay, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Jay, I just want to thank you for being the level-headed one on this podcast today.
I did not anticipate an Angels in the Outfield reference today. I'm not going to lie. I don't know how to handle it.
Yes, I really don't. We're only 8 minutes in. Don't worry, Zach. Jay will say something even dumber than this.
Well, I'm not really looking to make it a competition on who says something dumber. So I don't know that that's the goal here, no,
but to get, just to get back to that stuff, I want to give a lot of credit to Udoka, because he took a ton of criticism early on. And some of it was rightfully so, the rotations and everything he was going through and trying to figure out what's going to work and what isn't. Now he's got these guys rolling on a different level, right? It's both ends of the court. He's cut down his rotation and is just playing the guys that can hoop. And this is what's really kind of taken the Celtics to that next level here. And it's been very impressive watching them sort of rise up the standings with how bad they look to start the season.
Yeah, they're the fifth seed now, right? And climbing. And they're not that far off from getting home court advantage in the first round. And so Jay, like, obviously Jaylen Brown's back now. Tatum was great. The starting lineup's really good. Derek White off the bench, like, all these things are falling into place. But is a bench unit outside of Derek White of Grant Williams, Daniel Tice, and I guess Peyton Pritchard, is that enough? Like, is that enough depth in your opinion for them to go potentially on a deep playoff run? And that doesn't mean like, hey, can they win the championship? Like, let's not do that corny thing. Like, let's just, like, let's say they get into the second round. Do you think they have enough with what we know, that the level of competition that's going to be in the second round for them, regardless of where they finish the season, like, it's going to be a contender in the second round. Do you think that they can upset that team? And maybe it's matchup dependent, but do they have enough to upset that team and get into the conference finals again?
Yeah, I think if you look at their team, you know, if they fail, it will probably be because their offense isn't good enough. And their offense has been much better lately. Tatum has turned a corner as a playmaker in a way that transforms the rest of the roster and gives him a better chance. But when you look at the teams they'll be playing against, it's going to be Philadelphia with James Harden and Joel Embiid. It's going to be Brooklyn with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and maybe we assume Ben Simmons.
Right.
It's going to be there are a lot of teams in the East that are just packed with top scorers and probably have more powerhouse of an offense than the Celtics. They're going to need Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to not just be great for themselves, but to open things up for everyone else. And where I see a potential issue is the shooting around those guys, especially. Can Marcus Smart and Derek White make shots in a playoff series? Can Grant Williams continue to shoot like he has this season, which has really been the first season of his life that he's made threes at a high clip?
Yeah.
Can they get away with, you know, playing? Obviously, they're defensively extremely talented, like, just loaded with really good defenders. But, you know, they don't have a high-level point guard on the team. A lot of the times in crunch time, they're basically going to be using Jason Tatum as their go-to guy. Will he be enough in that role, and do they have enough shooting around him? So that's what I see as, like, their potential limiting factors for them. But the transformation they've had under Ime Udoka has just been really, really impressive. And I think it says a lot about the guys on the team that were willing to change. You know, people have had issues with the way Tatum and Brown have played for a while. Well, those guys were willing to get coached. You know, Ime Udoka, for the first month and a half of the season, he was really hard on guys. and to the point where I had people from the league reaching out to me and saying, like, man, I can't believe he said that tonight. Like, are these guys tuning him out? And they didn't. And so obviously he's been pushing the right buttons. Obviously, there's buy-in now, and I think there's just a lot more IQ around those guys. You look at Al Horford, Derek White, Grant Williams. Like, they just have a lot of IQ guys, and I think moving Dennis Schroeder and Josh Richardson and upgrading those guys to White at the deadline was a really big move, because you can keep IQ and you can keep defense on the court at all times. And that's been the recipe for them, is just basically going with an 8-man rotation all the time, being big and being versatile, and having Jason Tatum make a whole lot of plays.
The other team that is red hot right now, the Dallas Mavericks, were 15-17 after their Christmas Day loss. They have since won 24 of 32 games. They just won one against the Sacramento Kings, which you may think, like, who cares? That's not an accomplishment. Well, they did it without Luka, who's been amazing, right? Like, Spencer Dinwiddie comes in and he's getting a lot better, you know, kind of recognition and credit than I guess some of the reports of, you know, coming out of his exit from Washington at the trade deadline, which was also, like, some confusing stuff just about, like, you know, how he, I guess, I don't even know how to describe it, like, not a bad guy, but maybe not the guy that they hoped in terms of, like, locker room presence and presence on the team and everything. And he even mentioned, like, he's like, yo, I was hurt by those reports. You know, like, right. I didn't view my time that way at all. And sometimes once a player gets traded, you can get members of an organization kind of leaking stuff out, or maybe outside forces leaking stuff out. I don't know. But he's come in and I'll admit, like, I didn't really understand the trade for the Mavs because I thought they had that position locked up. But Spencer Dinwiddie's been a good influence. Like, Jason Kidd is, you know, talking about coaches transforming, like, Jason Kidd's helped transform that defense into being one of the best in the league. And Mo, we've talked about this. Like, I think it's just because they rebound now. Like, it's I don't know if that's an actual answer, but that's really the, it appears to be the only difference, at least on the surface, I should say.
It's one of the harder things to pinpoint because I've tried to watch their defense many times over going like, okay, what's the secret sauce? And I don't want it to be, yeah, they're rebounding. Like, I really just, I want there to be a little bit more, but they're playing with more emphasis on that end and more focus and more locked in. And, you know, as important it is to just be beyond skilled defensively, having that effort can go a long way. And I think that's something that really helps a ton in the regular season. I want to see how that holds up in a playoff series and when teams are able to scheme and look at what they're doing and kind of figure out how they want to attack them. But to go back to Spencer Dinwiddie, I mean, his numbers have been outstanding. And granted, it's small sample size, right? Just 7 games. But 56% from the field on the same amount of shots as he was getting in Washington. He shot 37% in Washington. You know, in Dallas, he's getting 41% from three, 31% in Washington. Like, you're just kind of seeing, like, they are able to kind of let him go. And I think Luka's kind of the perfect running mate for him a little bit in the sense of, hey, I'm going to draw defense. I'll kick it out to you. You'll be able to attack. It's a little bit different than what they were getting from Bradley Beal. And then more importantly, when Luka goes to the bench, Dinwiddie can really step into that role. I think it's kind of been a great surprise for the Mavs. I don't know if you looked at them, if you asked them honestly, like, what were you really expecting from Dinwiddie? I don't think they'd come back and say, oh, we thought he'd be a 41% three-point shooter on 4 threes a night. Like, right. That's huge for them, you know, and that really opens up so much of them for their offense and how they can really attack and lighten the load on Luka, you know, during the playoff series.
So, Jade, do you think that the Mavericks can actually, like, break into the second round, right? Because it's been, oh, look, Luka, he's in the playoffs. And then they lose 2 years ago in the bubble. And it was like, oh, it's okay. It's the first time there. And then they're up 3-2 last year in the first round against the Clippers once again. And they blow the final 2 games of that series, end up losing in 7. And now it's a different team, right? Like, in terms of different coach. No more Kristaps. Like, you know, this team's playing defense and the offense is actually the one trying to catch up. But looking at, like, what that potential matchup could be, it's like, okay, if they play, I don't know, if they play the Jazz in the first round, all right, are we gonna, you know, just assume the Jazz are gonna be the Jazz, or do we think, like, the Mavericks are even capable of beating a team that's got that much offensive firepower if they end up facing, I don't know, like, the Warriors for some reason, or, you know, whatever, like, do we think that they can actually beat them in a 7-game series, especially if Draymond's healthy, or is it just another first round exit for the Mavs? But I guess we would feel differently about it because it happens potentially in a different way.
Yeah, they've been one of the most confusing teams for me to try to figure out this year because they're basically the inverse of what they've been in the past. And now they have a top 5 defense. Their offense has been just about average. And I do wonder if they have the defensive personnel to maintain that level of defensive efficiency in a playoff series. But here's the thing. Like, Luka, even earlier in his career, has been good enough in the playoffs to give his teams a chance. And you combine that with a better defense. Now they have a little more playmaking with Dinwiddie alongside Jalen Brunson. And maybe they'll have a chance. I also think we should not overlook the fact that Luka's gotten himself in great shape. And obviously he came into this regular season at least a little overweight. And he wasn't playing up to even what he's done in the past. The level he's playing at lately is just ridiculous. You see him with the tip jam, and it's like, oh, okay.
No, we're not doing that. He Luka jumped off. He pushed off the back of Dwight. Okay, it was a fun play, but he's not leaping like that. He pushed off Dwight's back.
This is Luka we're talking about. I'm not talking about
6'8".
Like, how many times have you seen a Luka put back dunk, even if he's getting assistance from somebody? I'm just saying he's in great shape now, and that changes things for them because that gives him a chance to be great in the fourth quarters. Fourth quarters have been an issue sometimes for them. That gives him a chance to defend at a much higher level, and he'll always be enough to give you a chance if he's in good shape. Like, he gave the Clippers hell when they had Kawhi and Paul George both healthy, and he was hobbling around on an ankle that wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
So get him healthy in a playoff series, put a top five defense around him. I'm not going to count them out, but I also don't think they have enough offensive firepower. Like, it's tough to be a one all-star type team.
Isn't it weird to think of the Mavs, though, as like, I don't think they have enough offense? Like, I just haven't thought of them that way the last 2 years.
No, but go ahead, Mo.
No, but I think we get lost a little bit in the offensive rating number, right? Like, when they had the historical offensive rating a few years ago, right? And then we're just unbelievable over, last season. You know, it was all centered on Luka. And then in the playoff series against the Clippers, look, game six, game seven, Luka was gassed, right? And I think the way they're playing now, where it's not so heliocentric and it's not so just focused on Luka, where he's works off the ball, comes back to get it, and then he can get stuff from Jalen Brunson making plays, Dinwiddie making plays. I think even though they have like in the average offensive rating, I think the way they're playing offensively right now is really going to help them in the playoffs, because Luka's going to have more energy for those fourth quarter runs, right? And to be the closer that they need in the fourth quarter. So I kind of think, like, I'm not so much worried about their offense. I don't know if their defense is real. I'm not trying to be a dick here, but just playoff time, it gets different. And I'll just be really interested to see if they're going to be able to hold up defensively, because I still can't pinpoint who do I trust on the perimeter to get a stop, It's the same criticism of Memphis. But
does
it's like
Jason
when you,
Kidd have angels in the outfield? Is that how their defense?
No. He doesn't. We know Jason Kidd doesn't have any angels. And I think the important aspect of just how they're going to attack, on the defensive end is really what I'd be watching for more in the playoffs. I'm not worried about their offense come playoff time. I think they're actually the way they're playing now will boost even more for them in the playoffs. I think it'll play better in the playoffs than it does in the regular season. I think it's the defense that I'm most concerned about.
Yeah. In this turnaround, they have shot much better from three. Right. And that's been kind of the thing all season, is like, can they just flat out make outside shots? And they're 20th on the season at 34.7%. But since the start of that turnaround after Christmas, they are 37% from three, which would be fourth in the league. Like they're clearly hitting shots in this stretch, which also shows you just how bad they were before that turnaround, and making jump shots. So yeah, maybe they do have enough offense, especially if Dinwiddie's going to play like this. But even then, like, enough for that Jazz team.
And that's the thing.
I don't know.
Playoffs hit, it's like not having that second real bucket getter can be detrimental. And I know Luka can shoulder a really, really heavy load. And I know when he's right, as he has been lately, like, there are very few guys in the league tougher to guard. But I just wonder if they can really get it done without that second guy to go get a bucket in a tight game when the other team's playing great defense.
My question is more, who's guarding, if they play the Jazz, who do you trust to get a stop against Donovan Mitchell?
Probably Finney.
That too.
Probably Finney, but it's like, how confident are you Finney's going to get that stop?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's fair.
That's where I'm at. But
maybe,
on both sides of the court.
I'd throw Reggie Bullock on. Like, Reggie can defend.
Reggie's good. I think when it comes to, like, just looking at
Donovan's
the Jazz.
Got his own issues with, like, shot selection in the playoffs, right? Like, it's not like the Jazz are some shining beacon of execution. Like, yeah.
That's just who I think they're going to end up playing. So I think that's going to be the thing. But if they get, I think the most important thing for them in this series, go get home court advantage.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Make it so that if this goes seven, that a game seven's in your arena. Because that hasn't been the case the other one year was in the bubble. But last season, obviously game seven being played in LA was a little bit more challenging. I think go get home court advantage and then I'll feel a lot more comfortable with them.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful design objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's switch gears to, we've got what, four games now with James Harden in Philly?
Yeah, because he sat out the other one.
Yeah, right? he sat out the one against Miami. I wonder if he made the trip to Miami. That's not important. I think, yeah, he sat out due to...
He was just trying to get to know his new teammates. He wanted to be around.
For sure, yeah.
Is that what we're calling them, teammates?
I'm guessing they got in around 1 or 2 a.m. That's probably too late to go out in Miami, right, at that point? Yeah, it's probably...
Everybody's in bed in Miami by 11. Usually. I don't know what you're talking
especially
about.
Especially for Harden. that's well past his bedtime. He can find anything to do for fun at that hour of night.
So I've been hesitant. Well, one, I just cannot stand the whole like scary hours. It's scary with these guys. Like no one's scared, right? Like, no, that's tough to
it. It's kind of scary.
It's not scary.
It's scary.
It's not scary.
It's basketball.
It's scary to watch a game with that many free throws. I'll tell you that.
Okay. That from an aesthetic standpoint, I'm with you. That is scary, boring, whatever you want to call it. But I've been hesitant to like really fawn over the results so far because they played the Wolves, who granted are better than they normally are, but they're still the Wolves. They played the Knicks twice and kind of, you know, played with their food a little bit against the Knicks until they just put them away. And then the win over Cleveland that's a good win, right? That's a good win at home against a solid, like, young team who's sliding a little bit, but still, like, that's a good defensive team. They battled them. They executed down the stretch. For me, the takeaway so far is very little to do with Harden, although he's been great. And I just keep marveling at the way Tyrese Maxey's playing, because that was my biggest question after that trade. And it's not like you don't do this trade because, oh no, what are you going to do to Tyrese Maxey if he doesn't handle this well, right? Like that's not a reason not to trade for James Harden. But I just wondered, okay, he's been the lead guard all year in his second season and he's done really well. Well, now you take the ball out of his hands and how does he play? And Mo, the way he's played is he attacks off the catch so quickly. It's like he's made up his mind what he wants to do, but in a way that is not something that you can just like, I don't know, that you just telegraph, right? Like, it's not like the defense knows like, okay, he's going to do this. Like, but he is reading the defense. He's reading the help defense of how they're helping off him. And he knows, all right, I'm going to attack middle. I'm going to go baseline. I'm going to, you know, just shoot the shot here. Like he is playing at a basketball IQ level that for a guy with his experience and the role, like it's beyond what I just thought he was capable of doing at this point in his career with this kind of adjustment on the fly.
Yeah. I mean, this has been, he's been the big winner in the trade.
Yeah.
Forget the teams or anything. He's been the big winner. It's worked out. He's getting so many more open looks. He's probably felt like he's never been this wide open in his life before. He's the way he attacks, right? And it's super aggressive. And in that game against Cleveland, like, he hit some big shots. Mm-hmm. You know, Cleveland, I mean, he comes off of a step-up screen, knocks down a three. Harden comes up with a steal. He's out there on the break getting a bucket. Like, he made some big plays in that whole run. And I think it's him being that third scorer and just being able to really be slithery. You know, like when the ball comes to him and the defense is rotating, he's able to get really skinny and just gets right into the lane. And from there, it's just a constant attack. Like this has been the biggest bounce you could see for a guy, you know, kind of off of a trade where it's like, great, this is going to be great for me. And you could see the excitement he's getting.
Oh, for sure. He's shooting 62% from the field, 65% from three in these five games.
That's all?
Since Harden got into the lineup. And one of those was without Harden, obviously. He's
naked every time.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God! Yeah,
I agree. I still have a lot of questions about this team. Like, what happens when Joel Embiid's on the bench in a playoff series?
You don't believe in DeAndre Jordan?
I am not a believer in 2022 DeAndre Jordan. That is,
or 2021 DeAndre Jordan, or 2020 DeAndre Jordan. It's how far back are we going?
I mean, I feel a lot better about whatever is left of Paul Millsap at this point than I do DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, and so they have real questions, but I think the early signs of how is Harden going to fit with Embiid, how does Harden look health-wise after, you know, dealing with alleged hamstring stuff in Brooklyn, how does he look? Is he more engaged? Like all that stuff. Check.
I don't know about alleged hamstrings. Like he had a legitimate hamstring issue for a year. I think it's fair to question whether or not he couldn't play on it.
The way that he played over his last month or so in Brooklyn prompted many questions about his body beyond just okay, is he going to deal with a hamstring issue every now and then? Has he lost a step? And I think the answer to that is pretty clearly not really. And so you can just see the energy picked up the second he got to Philadelphia,
for sure,
as a lot of people expected. And then the other part of it is like, how do they defend? how do they defend when they're playing a playoff roster with, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving? Like, who's going to be guarding those guys? Is James Harden going to have to guard one of those guys?
I mean, you got Matisse Thybulle. He's pretty good.
You're going to have Thybulle.
Joel Embiid as an anchor, you know, to funnel everything towards. He's good.
Okay,
then,
so.
And then?
I'm not saying. Okay, but, like, but they also are going to score 130 points. Like, you know, they might have questions about defending, but they don't have zero defenders on the floor. They have at least two elite defenders when they want and other guys who are capable. Like, yeah, Maxey's not a defender yet, and James Harden is James Harden, and Tobias Harris is whatever. But shit, all right, go keep up with them then.
And at the end of the day, they have two of the most physical forces in the entire NBA. Like, I feel like people overlook sometimes how much of an ox James Harden is for a wing player. And like, that dude is strong as hell.
Yeah.
He draws a ton of contact. And Embiid, obviously, he's maybe the strongest guy in the league, if not like for Steven Adams or something like that. And so they have two guys who are just physical forces and will live at the free throw line. So their margin for error because of those two guys is going to be very big. But some of the stuff around the margins, we'll see. The East is crazy, man. Like, there are a lot of experiments going on in the East right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
There are a lot of teams that are just in experiment mode still 1 month before the end of the season.
It makes it so funny to me because you guys mentioned earlier that Udoka was taking heat for, like, you know, experimenting with rotations early on in the season. It's like, but isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Yes.
you can't possibly just, like, new coach taking over. No, like, this is my rotation. Deal with this. Like, no, you got to play around with that shit a little bit. And now after some of these moves, like, Doc Rivers has to figure this out on the fly. Steve Nash has been figuring stuff out on the fly all season because of the absences and everything there. Like, you know, Boston is still had to bring guys in and make adjustments and react on the fly, even as they had kind of figured things out. Like, it's, you're right, like, the East is just this laboratory right now, and laboratory might blow up for all we know. Like, I don't know, or it might create like the greatest products ever.
Well, the best part is whoever comes out of the East, they're going to be bloody and beaten, right? Like you just look at the road. There's really not a lot of easy wins, especially going from the second round on, yeah. Right? You're not looking at it going like, okay, like, hey, any combination, but you're going to have to go through at some point Philly or Miami or Milwaukee, you know, and in some cases going through two of those teams, yeah. Like that's going to be exhausting, right? And it's going to be great for us, but it is going to be exhausting for whatever team comes out and gets out to the finals. I don't look at one team going like they're going to walk through the East.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. That's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
No, I don't. I think you'd have to be an insane person to think like any of these teams are going to walk through. Well, then that can bring us to our game, and we can kind of fold everything into the mix here to talk about KD being back of our game. What's worse? Falling to the 3 seed in the West or getting a top 2 seed in the East? Because if you fall to the 3 seed in the West, you're probably facing either Denver or Dallas. Denver, obviously, got to deal with Jokic and possibly the return of Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., whatever form that ends up being. Or Dallas, who has Luka Doncic and a potentially revamped defense, as we talked about, and whatever they can do offensively. In the East, if you win a top 2 seed, you're gonna face Brooklyn. One of those teams is gonna face Brooklyn. Like, there's your congratulations for being one of the two best teams in the East the regular season. Unless Toronto, like if Toronto can't, you know, can possibly beat Brooklyn in that first play-in tournament game, then I think we all expect Brooklyn to win that second one, right? And end up as the 8th seed.
You're gonna see a lot of stars sitting that last couple.
I like legitimately started, like we were joking earlier in the season about, you know, should Brooklyn not get the number one overall seed because of Kyrie Irving's status. And obviously that's changed, but now it's like, man, I'd rather be the 3 seed right now than be a top 2 seed.
It's going to be funny when Omer Yurtseven goes for like 40 to keep the Heat in the 1 seed and doom them to a match.
Bo's going to pull him in the third quarter and be like, Deadman, you're running point.
I want no part of KD and Kyrie in a first round matchup in a playoff if I'm a top seed team.
Like, I know they've lost both games, but KD looks like he didn't leave.
I want no part of that. Like, I would be terrified as a coach. By the way, I'd be terrified to play against Jokic the way he's playing too. But I'll take my chances there instead of KD, Kyrie. I mean, they were in this game against the Celtics till probably like the last 2 minutes. It took Boston playing at another level. And, you know, again, we presume Simmons is going to come back. I think he's going to help. You know, I don't think it's going to be as easy for teams defensively against Brooklyn when Simmons is out there and things like that. Like, I want no parts of this team playing in the first round. I would be doing whatever I can to avoid it. Miami might need to tank some games, being three games up in the one spot. They might need to just sit everybody out.
This might sound way too obvious.
Always a good start every to a sentence.
Every time I watch Kevin Durant in person, I leave just mesmerized. Like,
yeah.
He's way taller than I expect every single time I see him.
He's 7 feet.
And just the level of efficiency to do whatever he wants against whoever he wants to do it against is just outrageous. And he comes back from like a month absence or whatever it was, and just he's at full strength right away. Like, it doesn't matter. The one thing about the Nets that wouldn't scare me at all is their defense is really bad, and they're going to be playing a lot of really short guards that are going to be targets
for sure
come playoff time. Yeah. You saw today, and I know Simmons is out, and when he gets back, he'll fix some of this, but Seth Curry was legitimately guarding Jaylen Brown. Like, that was not a cross match.
No, yeah, they were just like, let's put him on
Seth Curry on Jaylen Brown.
They had Claxton on Tatum.
Yeah. And whenever the Celtics wanted, they were just getting Seth Curry or one of the big men on Tatum and putting them in really bad situations. So I have serious reservations about how the Nets are going to hold up defensively.
But again, KD,
but they will score
Kyrie,
a million points.
Seth Curry,
they will score
Patty
a million
Mills,
points.
Like, there's a lot of shooting on the floor.
But Jay, here's the thing. They only have to get like four more stops. Right. Is Ben Simmons forced? Like, that's really, it's not even like they have to be just devastating defensively. They just need to be just a little bit better. And I think
they just
get
need
that.
a couple stops.
Just a couple more stops. There. Right. And that, and I feel like that makes the big difference. And assuming what Simmons comes back as, I'm just assuming from the way he looked last season. Who knows? But it's just, I mean, God, I want nothing to do with KD in the playoffs.
Right, but if you're
he nearly beat the Bucks by himself.
I know, he really did. I mean, it was so close.
I mean, like, what are we doing?
The Bucks gave him hell, and he was just like, okay, let's do this. Like, I'm here for it.
And he gave him 30 a night. Yeah.
Like, James Harden dragging that leg around all over the place. Like it was like he was going to do anything. I think James Harden shot like 8% in that series.
There's nothing you can do against that man.
Yeah. You pray. Like, holy water, garlic, I don't know. Like, whatever. Get a priest, an old priest and a young priest. Like, there's nothing you can do against KD. But on the
Maybe
Western.
Unless you have some angels in the outfield.
Sometimes in the backcourt. Jay, not in the outfield.
You're just going to see guys flapping their wings on their back.
But here's the thing. If they start doing that, I'm just going to expect it. Like, oh, is Jason Terry going to come in as an airplane? It's like, why is Jason Terry here? Like, that's just the motion I'm going to start thinking of. But in the Western Conference, look, like, there's a big difference between facing either Denver or Dallas in the first round and facing like the Wolves or whatever's left of the Clippers, or God forbid the Lakers. The Lakers aren't going to get into that top.
What are you doing?
So as the seventh seed, you know, whoever the seventh seed is, whether that's the Wolves or the Clippers, like, that's a huge difference. Can I solve D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns, or do I have to solve Jokic? Do I have to solve Luka? Like, the Warriors should be stressed. Hell, Memphis should be stressed. Memphis has a chance to go to the conference finals, right?
Yeah. I think if they get the second seed in the West, I think they got a real good shot. I think they might be my pick if they get the second seed. But you're asking, like what you just said, right? Can you solve, you got to solve Jokic or Doncic. Those aren't players you can solve, right?
Right.
Like those dudes are on other levels. You. Yeah. Like, it's, can I just throw enough crap at them to get them to go, you know, average 28 instead of 30?
Yeah, can I just make it through the Shawshank sewer system, right? To get out of the other
exactly.
side.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, that's what's so scary about those guys, right? And this is, first off, and again, I hate doing this. Got to give you credit. This is a great question.
This is the only kind I have.
No, you don't. But this one is a good one because it's, you know, pick your poison, basically, right? Like, I'm confident even without Murray and Porter, Jokic can at least get you two games in the playoffs, if not a series.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Like, especially
if Draymond's not healthy, if he's not 100%, or if he's even back, right?
Yeah.
He may come back and then get hurt again. Like, this is a back issue. That's going to be very touchy the rest of the way. And then for Memphis, like, you know, look, I know Denver hasn't won a whole lot in the playoffs, but they've been to the conference finals. Like Jokic, like they've been through a bunch of 7-game series for as little experience as they have as a team, right? And so you're coming in there and you've played 5 games against the Jazz in your career and a couple of play-in tournament games. That's not a lot of experience to deal with someone like Jokic.
And not even that, like most of the Warriors supporting cast doesn't have that experience.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You're looking at Poole, Lee,
Wiggins.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at a lot of guys that don't have that level of experience that a lot of those guys on the Nuggets do. And I think that's really kind of the scary thing for the Warriors having to go up against, if they have to go up against Denver. Might be a little bit different against Dallas, but I think Denver would be the team I'd be pretty afraid of.
Yeah, I think, either way, I think it's a mistake. Don't get the 3 seed in the West and don't get a top 2 seed in the East.
And Denver is such a wild card right now. Because you give Jokic a couple more pieces around him, and that could be really dangerous. And who knows what Jamal Murray will look like if he comes back? Who knows what Porter Jr. will look like if they come back? But even 80%, 75%, 65% of Jamal Murray would be a major upgrade on some of the guys they're playing right now.
Is Campazzo still in the league? They shouldn't play Campazzo anymore.
And would take more and more pressure off Jokic and give him 2 more great shooters to surround him with, maybe the best passer in the league. So, yeah, and to add the other layers to that, with the Warriors slipping to 3, they've got to refine themselves. They've got Draymond back to deal with. They've got Klay, who's still not playing like his old self all the time. They've got a defense that has gone missing. Like that team has to re-tinker and get back to what they did at the beginning of the season. So yeah, I think that series could be a trouble for Golden State, honestly. And if they lose in the first round, man, that would be tough after the start that they had.
And also think, like, granted, this changes when Draymond's on the floor, but that game they had against Dallas, Steph plays the entire fourth quarter and doesn't get a shot. Like, other teams are just going to swarm him and say anybody else. Now, Draymond knows how to reset that.
Draymond's in there.
Yeah, right. If Draymond knows how to reset that and get him some stuff off, just, you know, dribble handoffs and making sure to wait that extra second for him to get open, which a lot of these other guys don't know to do. So I get that that's going to change, but still, like, that's the strategy, right? That's the strategy because Klay isn't 100%. You can't just be like, well, we'll just go to Klay.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. And I think that was kind of the unfair expectations that were placed on Klay coming back this season. Was like, for me, this season for Klay was always like, all right, let's just go get your body right back to playing NBA level, you know, and whatever you get us is great, is a bonus. But for the most part, like, we need to depend on Curry and those guys. And Curry's just struggled this year. I mean, obviously, a lot of it's been played without Draymond, but he's having one of his worst shooting years, you know, ever. And that's weird because it's probably like, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm guessing it's around 36% or something. And for Curry to shoot 36% and for us to be like, damn, that's bad. Like, that's just how good he is.
Over his last 40 games, and I know there's more to it than just this, but over his last 40 games, 41% from the field, 35.5% from three. That's not Steph Curry.
No.
And that's a 40-game stretch. Like this is not something like, oh, you know, he's been in a bit of a slump. Like, no, he hasn't shot well since fucking Thanksgiving.
And Draymond solves a lot for them, but how much is he going to solve if he's not 100%? It's getting close to the end of the regular season.
Yes. Right. They keep saying that he's not exactly a few weeks. I was like, we only have a few weeks left in the regular season.
Right. He's not exactly a guy who has always been able to like miss time and be in good shape. You know, like what type of shape is he going to be in when he comes back?
Yeah.
Like that's a big question to me is because he was in great condition at the beginning of the season. He was flying up.
He was by far the defensive player of the year. Everything. Yes.
Yeah. And so that's a big question to me too. Is he going to come back in great shape? Is he going to take care of all the details while he's out so that by the time he gets back, whenever it is, he'll be able to reach that level that he was at before? There are just a lot of questions about that squad right now.
And we'll be able to cover it all right here on The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic, folks. TheAthletic.com. We got a great app for you. We got great coverage. Make sure you subscribe for the rest of this series and the playoff run and then the draft and then free agency and then previews for next season and then, you know, the next season after that. And it's a cycle that you're not going to want to break because you like basketball. If you've listened to us for 45 minutes at this point, I'm guessing you do. Or maybe you just like us. Unlikely, but maybe you're going to want to subscribe to The Athletic. Make sure you check out all the shows across.
Next week, Mo's going to make like a little Giants reference or like rookie.
Ooh, no, I'll work on one. I'll find one.
You don't have to.
No, now I have to. I feel challenged.
We're busy next week. I don't know if we'll have time. Make sure you are subscribed to The Athletic NBA Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to all the other podcasts across the network. Make sure you check out No Dunks. Check out What Did I Miss with Michelle Beadle. And again, subscribe to The Athletic. For Mo, for Jay, I'm Zach. You want to keep it locked? The best coverage in sports. Yeah.
Blown. Boy, they're bad.